1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
On the lake again. I just can't wait to get on the lake again. Fishing solo, cause my buddy, he can't cast. And I can't wait to get on the lake again. On the lake again. Yanking bucktails out of trees again. Tidy couldn't hit water if he fell out of the boat. And I can't wait to get off the lake again.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. A Jay Bird. What are you doing, buddy?
Steve, how's it going?
I'm alive.
There you go. Off the water and podcasting.
Off and doing. It is never ending. But speaking of never ending, the wait is over. Finally, tomorrow, the Blade Planer boards will be at the Muskie Shop alive and kicking. So it has been, boy, howdy. It never ends with the ways of the world. You got this. You're trying to get things from, oy vey. But finally, they're here. One thing that you're going to love about them is that they're here. So I actually sent Jay a video the other day goofing around pulling a Jake at 9 miles an hour. So there's that.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
And I had, you know, it was funny. I was trolling today with the guys in the boat this morning and something that came up. He's like, well, you know, they work for other stuff. And I did want to point that out, something I've not really ever brought up. The way that I designed this with this loop area here is you can see the vibration at your rod tip on any bait. So it self-tunes, and you're still going to see vibration at the rod tip from even, say, like a Berkeley Flicker Shad or the tiniest walleye stuff. So check them out. Books, check them out. Finally, the blades there. Jay, any of the comings and goings?
Well, crap.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there you go. Go ahead.
No, the Magnus Short Tail.
Whatever. Junior Magnus Tails, they will also go up for sale tomorrow morning when I get to work.
I forgot about that. Literally, I ran off the boat, ran in here, and I'm slurping down a tasty beverage and trying to do her here. Yeah, so the small tails, that's going to make that thing check in, you know, at a much smaller size here. I'm looking online. We got to update that because it's the 5-inch tail. So the 5-inch tail is going to make that just about an 8-inch bait overall, right? 7. Jay, have you measured? I can't recall off the top of my head. Like I said, I just ran in here. But the short tail is 5 inches, and then so your overall length. So that's going to be great for your panfish waters if you're fishing shad stuff. Bunch of people asked me over the time on this. So the stock hooks are fine. They will not catch the tail. You can use reduced hooks if you want, which is not the worst idea ever, right? So you could go with the smaller hooks if you want to do that. Obviously, we don't sell the bait with two different hooks, but the stock hooks will work, or you can reduce your overall hook size if you want. So now you got a downsized version. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Finally getting stuff. And the big scare this week, you want to talk about comings and goings of thoughts of musky stuff, is what's going to happen with getting stuff. old supply chain, we're about to take a kick in the pants, boys. So hopefully not. Keep an eye on it. I would say this, just whatever, leave politics out of it, but if there's something you need, get it. And I don't mean that about my stuff or whatever. Just get what you need just so you know you got it, you know, because it's going to be either, who knows, whatever. I'll shut up. Just do it while you can, just on that front, just to make sure you got it, because everything from hooks to just about everything you're touching in fishing is coming from a place that's getting hit with the T word. But you got the short tails, you got the planer boards. What else here? What else? Obviously, we talked about the guppies. Jay, how much longer does the MEPS thing cook for?
Another couple weeks. We'll run that through the entire month of April.
Nice.
15% off the Aglia MEPS. Yep.
There you go.
And the GB Baits Jawbreaker. Yeah. You don't know. Got out of the Muskie Shot Pond Friday. Had a little break in the action and got some footage of it. So I put a short together. So there is some underwater footage of it on the website now. Nice. When you look at that. So I had a few people ask.
I had
a few people comment. It's like, hey, is there any underwater footage? And I'm like, hey, top of my priority as soon as we can find some open water. So we did. And yeah, the thing looks great. The vibration on that, you've run that, right?
Yeah, I've had it for a while.
I mean, you know what it's, you know what it's about. Super shallow. You control that thing. And the vibration it puts out, it feels like you're, I mean, it feels like a double bladed bucktail.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool.
Yeah, track's great. And yeah,
that I like I said, cast intro. So it's a knockout, you know. And I don't know. Like I said, shad based. That's a trolling frickin' machine. beyond a doubt. But wow, we're finally there, Jay. So open water. You got some place to throw it. What's kind of the status report? What's the update right now on what this is looking like?
Yeah, I was on the water this morning, so I took a great little video, put it on my Instagram story of the look and the sound of the ice dying. It's awesome. Nice. It was coming into shore, just disintegrating, and you could hear it. It's just a thing of beauty to see.
How much?
So that's on a flowage. So right. Granted, you know, there's some current and river influence there, and parts of that are wide open. Lakes are deteriorating really fast. So don't go ice fishing. Don't go ice fishing in Vilas County, by the way.
Somebody sent me an article. Somebody passed away on like the river down next to the Dale. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a dangerous time to be out. I don't know if you saw that story. It was like somebody. Yeah, you don't want to be out in dicey conditions, especially on the deteriorating ice. What would you say, Jay? A couple weeks or a week or maybe this week everything will be off?
Hopefully a week. It's kind of a cool forecast after today. It's beautiful today, but yeah, maybe about a week.
Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It'll be wide open. Anything? Is there anything else like churning? Anything else you're hearing you're getting cool before season opener, you know, because there's not a ton of new stuff hit the market. Is there anything else brewing that you're aware of?
Well, that Swivlo Genesis reel that we talked about a few weeks ago, that thing's been we've already got a restock on that one, right, in the works. They've been selling like crazy, so I've taken several people out to the parking lot, and everyone that threw it is
big.
Yeah, you should see the lure that's attached on that. Yeah. It's punched in the gravel. It's beautiful.
Chucker in
the
grass.
It's beyond hookware, Steve. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah, when you're chucking them in the
Nothing but super positive comments on it. So that thing's really cool. So we're happy about that, too.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we have – oh, crap. Before I forget, I literally had it open here. Another thing just to lay it on you. That's been up for like 2 weeks. And I haven't even mentioned. So another update. I eked it out because I have so much free time, let me tell you. So,
right.
Yeah, right. Anyway, another update on the app here for all you funsies here. Obviously, you got your moon face, which is, I hope you're enjoying that. It's super convenient. You know, it's exactly how I think it needs to be, where we can look forward and back and all that fun stuff, right? And I've always threatened the journaling. So there's a Muskie journal on the app now. If you go into the My 360, kind of the big menu there, and there's the Muskie journal. And you've got date, you got location. Species is auto-filled at Muskie. You can change it if you had to. You got air, weather, water temperature, water conditions, your start time, your stop time, catches, baits used, catch details, right? How many follows, what baits got follows. Then you have kind of a trips note and an observation thing here. So if this is going to cache on your phone, and then you have backup, journal, and notes, right? So I'll do it. Boom, let me send this. Bam. I just freaking texted 2J. While we're sitting here, boom, a journal entry. Bam. See it, Jay? Check your tags.
Coming through now. My Fishing Journal by Stephen Paul.
There you go. It doesn't say
bad. Location, Bad Boy Lake. I didn't know you fished that lake.
Just making it up. What species?
I'm reading the rest
catch
of this.
Horse, yeah.
Species horse.
Catch details. Biggest. I think.
Biggest.
Catch time. It says fart, fart, fart.
I'm not going to repeat the rest, but it's good stuff. But that's I didn't know you did that, Steve. That's really cool. That's a great idea.
It has been done for days, and I forgot to tell you because I've been so freaking busy.
Mm-hmm.
I literally, it's kind of like, kind of proud of it. Now, obviously, if you want to write stupid stuff in there, you can't, no one else will see it. But what's cool is you can go in, view them, edit them, whatever you want to do for those days. But now you have it in your phone. Now, if you go to, back up your journal, you can send that. You can email it to yourself. You can send it to your notepad. You can text a day. You could text the entire journal. There's a lot of things you can do. And obviously, it'll say fail if you don't send it anywhere. So you hit that. You go to your journal. But if you don't select anybody or select anything. But, yeah, back up your journal.
Mm-hmm.
Select where you want to send it. What I'm going to be doing is probably backing it up to notes every once in a while, because as your phone updates, this is the thing, you know, if, let's say you got all this data in there and you never back it up to something else, you go and update your phone, or there's a litany of things, right? So if your notes are really important to you, just make sure you do this. But I wanted to provide everybody with kind of a template so you could have something to work with, right? Because you could, I know a lot of guys will text themselves stuff, or they just go in their notes on their phone or something like that, which mm-hmm, you can, mm-hmm. But then you're going, well, what am I documenting, or what did I forget? So this is at least a solid template, I think, to cover all your bases and keep it organized.
Cool.
And yeah, very cool. Very, very good. And you know, it's like one thing I'll tell you, it's garbage in, garbage out, boys. So. If you keep good notes, you'll get good information on it. And although other thing, it's automatically, so whatever, you know, whatever to the day, it's keeping track of what day you're doing it, so you don't have to do any of that mess. Which is handy, because now on your phone, you can have all your notes, and you could go back in time and look at the moon phase in the past. Huh?
When you have time. Exactly. All
right. Other thing I added is it says musky activity meter right below that. So this is another one. You got to allow it. You hit the allow and I'll let you check your location there. What I'm doing, and you'll go, okay, it just changes. It's based on your location, and it gives you a recap of moon. So we're in full moon phase. But a lot of people talk about barometric pressure. Not quite the thing I'm going to hang my hat on all the time, but people are always watching the barometer. So this is a display of what it should be based on moon phase and barometric pressure, your shifting fronts, right, of an activity meter. I had people in the past ask me, like, oh, there's day ratings, right? They've seen day ratings for different days, or it's a 2-star fishing day, or it's a 5-star day. This is the best day. This is just something similar where it gives you a, hey, this is what this is based on moon phase and barometric pressure to your local location, what you should be expecting, right? Do not hang your hat on this. You guys know better, right? There's too many factors. But what I wanted is I wanted something that told me what the barometric pressure in millibars was where I was at. So the takeaway, you can look at this and go, okay, is barometric pressure playing on where I'm at? What can I look at? You know, what's the combination? So it's just more data there in the app for you. You can look at and go, hey, this you keep it in your notes. You know, hey, this is what's taking place, or this is what's going on. You might be able to see patterns. So just another patterning tool of the musky activity meter. You know, that's way funner than saying, hey, give you the barometric pressure in the moon phase.
So, it's way funner.
Way funner. So, yeah, I got that. You got your journaling. We got the hook library. You got your weight calculator, your trolling charts. Dang. What do you know?
Yep.
I can't believe I got the journal done. Yeah. That's...
You got the bash coming up shortly in July, July 19th at the Muskie Shop. We're working on that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I forgot.
Vendor list is growing. If you didn't get back to me.
Anyway, we need to get on it. I learned something too. Speaking of phones, as incompetent as I am, I have not checked the junk mail, and there's so many people writing things to the app. So if you've asked a question and you haven't answered, have it answered. There's hundreds of questions for Q&A in the junk mail, Jay. So gotcha. I apologize. We try to get to all of them as we can. It takes time, but there's a lot of them. So we're going to hit some Q&A first up. Right? It says Slime Seeker. I was listening to episode 157, and what I do to keep mouse out of the compartment of my boat is use Irish Spring Soap. Well, thank you. I guess I don't remember what we were talking about, but it sounds like junk in the trunk, mice in the boat, Jay. So mice in the boat. I don't remember. Yeah. At some point. Have you ever had that? You get red squirrels, mice. I'm sure we're talking about it. I've had it before where they get a bunch of mice in the boat over winter or something like that. But yeah, soap, mothballs, if you ever run into that, that's a good one. Zach, my fishing buddy and I have one similar goal this year. Getting his sister, my girlfriend, a muskie. Right? It's better than it's being his sister and his girlfriend. I'm confused.
True. Miles better. Yeah.
Miles better. Okay. My grandpa girlfriend. We call it a dunkle down here. Dad, uncle. Anyway, his girlfriend, his buddy's sister, they want to get her a muskie. Now, with that being said, we're in a bit of a debt, fatigue, boredom kicking in. She's throwing baits. What does it say? I'm suggesting having a dead stick, rig off the side, save your grizzly. She takes a break. Idea. So basically, we're looking for what kind of ideas? What can we do? You know, to
stir it up for
to
her.
Stir it so up, it's not bit, boring, you know. And it's just not a the beating of the week. I get it. There's nothing worse than, you know, taking someone that wants to catch a muskie. Heck, it's guiding. Hey, I want to catch a muskie, and you go, well, it's going to be a lot of work, and you need to do some stuff. You know, as far as hanging something over the boat, I've caught a couple fish over the years of just having like ones I can think of. I've caught them on like a tube. I've caught them on alien eels hanging over the side of the boat. I think didn't freaking Jim Stewart, Muskie Shop Jim, Tube Screamer, he caught one with a toothy tough hanging over the side of the boat. It can work. You know, if it's something where someone wants to just simply sit, like they just want to sit and hold something, and not like if it's girlfriend, like, hey, I don't want to jig this or I don't want to do anything. And it can. I mean, I can count the times it's happened to me on three fingers, you know. So how productive that might be, I don't know. You know, I've heard tell of other people, especially with the boats moving, of guys that were hanging, and I don't know, cracking with a grub tail would be a good option for that. There used to be like the big grub baits, the whale tails. I'm not seeing those too terribly much, but you could like have a big grub, and if your boat's moving, it's kind of doing a little bit more, right? So something that's wavering. I think like the crosstail sucker might be a little heavy because it's going to hang down weird, but you could take like a crack and take the weights out of it and have something going on. I'll tell you, just a spinner bait with a light bait, that might be good. But the only time I've really had any action on baits just hanging off the side of the boat is in big chop. Right? So if you're really rocking around, yeah, if you got a tube jumping back and forth. So depends on conditions. But, you know, maybe you can talk her into jigging a little Bondi. That'd be cool. Like one of the Bondi minis. You could always do that. Just here, sit here and bang it. But it's tough. It's like the more you want to get somebody to fish, the harder
you can get her, you know, into downsizing stuff too, you know. Hopefully get some multi-species hits going.
Yeah.
That might be, you know, where it's still viable to catch a muskie with it.
Put her on the pounder, boys.
Torture session.
Put her on the pounder. Cliff Wagner, how do you catch a big muskie? Well, Cliff, it's the same as catching a little one, my friend. Grind, grind, grind. What we got here? Luke. Okay, what kind of lures do you focus on when fishing a river and it's exceptionally windy? Interesting. Well, some people I'm sure are going, well, it doesn't matter. There are times, if depending on how the wind's affecting the current of the river, it can mean everything, right? Especially if you have a wind running counter to current. You know, yeah. And it's like kind of, I don't know what the, there's a term. I don't have to know every term. Excuse me, sir. I don't have to know them all. For when the wind's running counter to the current, and it's just kind of the waves just kind of are these stationary chop. It's like driving down a rutted out back road, right? It's not kind of rolling over and they're kind of crappy. It'll screw with the way baits are running, right? It's kind of like, oh, the bait's running right and it hits the current. It's not. So when wind is a factor when fishing a river, you know, I'm not going like this is the bait to throw, right? What I'm going to do is I'm going to assess what is taking place right then and there with my eyeballs to the best of my ability, right? Keeping a cast high enough that I go, okay, when this bait's landing, it's on the edge. Let's say there's a current break on the edge and I'm throwing a shallow invader, right? Just picking a bait. Pick any crankbait you want to go, okay, it runs right and then it hits the current. It's windy and it's just running on its side and it's running like crap, right? Wind, waves, current, all this stuff can really wreak havoc on how your bait's running, especially rivers. Now you're taking that extra step of, like I said, how it's going to interact at a pocket pools and eddies. Sometimes you have to start tweaking right then and there and go, okay, this is running in the slack, but once it hits a current and everything's all chopped up and everything's weird, it's running funky, where you might need to add weight. There's times you have to just switch different bait classes. When I am faced with like really gnarly, bad conditions in moving water and it's affecting the way baits are running, I will generally just, and I'm talking like where nothing, like everything sucks. You know, it's just like boat control's bad, bait control's bad. I will often just opt for a safety pin spinner bait and just select mm-hmm. a blade with the amount of lift that I need. Okay, the fish are running shallow. Crankbaits are just going wacky and goofy, you know. You can usually depend on a safety pin spinner bait to get it done. So if I need to keep her shallow, I might go with like an Indiana or Colorado, or I'm targeting deep, small willow, whatever we got to do to change that blade out to accommodate. But that's going to be your easiest kind of bait choice in those off conditions where wind's just wreaking havoc on moving water. What do you think, Jay? You fish moving water quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good call. You know, I'd avoid something like I'd avoid glide baits, especially. That would be a really bad situation because that's on slack line. You know, yeah, certain crankbaits, you know, certain twitch baits, you want them snappy and erratic. Yeah. You know, that could be good, but again, it all boils down on your presentation depth. You know, your target depth too.
Well,
so
that's the thing. I mean, I've been out plenty of times where it's like current's taking the bait. where there's days where the wind is in the current are fighting one another, and you go, oh, well, when the bait's floating up, it's doing nothing, or it's just kind of, you'll see it. If you fish moving water enough, there's wind conditions that will just screw everything up. And, you know, where you're the current's at your transom and you're fighting to go downstream, what do you think your bait's doing? You know, it's just kind of like, you know, bait fish don't usually struggle and then float this way. So you're looking for something that's going to just accommodate. It's not every time, but I'm talking, you know, bad and moderately extreme conditions. You're just going to have to relegate yourself to something with its weighting and that will at least run in a natural manner. I mean, you're just in with gliders. That's a whole other dynamic where there's, you know, not a lot of gliders run great in current. You know, some do. Hailhounds, great. You know, your bigger phantoms, like the smaller phantoms, don't contend with it too well. They will, but, you know, you're just going to have to look at it. And then windy conditions, probably a glider's not your best choice. But anyway, Leo, love the show. Love what you guys are doing. What is your guest's favorite topwater lure of all time? Jay, favorite topwater lure of all time?
I'm not a big topwater guy. I've had, I've got an old lay lure that did really well. It was a hog wobbler style bait. I like hog wobbler style baits, the crawling, jointed, noisy surface baits like that that run great slow.
Mm-hmm.
For tail baits, I'm trying to think. Probably my trusty top raider. Yeah, I mean, back in the day, I used to throw a lot more, jackpots and stuff like mm-hmm. that, kind of as a search bait. A lot of us did. And the giant jackpot, the pose, the walk the dog top water bait.
Yeah.
A lot of action on that. Didn't catch a lot. Had a lot of action on it. How about you?
Well, that's pose Havana banana. Forget about it. 8-inch pose. Yeah. I don't miss them, baby. Once they taste the Havana banana, they're in the net. That I just grease them. They don't even make the big one anymore, do they?
No.
Yeah, they should. George, how much of a factor is scent with muskie fishing? Is it size profile or scent play at all? Well, it depends. If you ask the scientist at Dr. Juice, I know what the answer would be. Yes. Here's the thing. It's scent. You can go a million directions on this, but let's just go to the simplest, most logical thing. Can muskies taste things? Yes, they can. Can they smell? Yes. How much of a factor is it? Nobody really knows. I mean, you're going to find every school of thought you want on that subject matter. For me, there's too many other factors at play before scent. Buddy, I got to be so freaking dialed in. And I've avoided scents because you go, what if you got the wrong scent on? We got the right bait, we have the right profile, the right speed, the right action, and we have now selected, Joe Bob's muskie getter scent, and we shouldn't have picked sour cream and onion. They were really into the bacon pimento today. Right? So it's a factor that I leave out of the equation. Now, with that being said, I will grab a bait after spraying sunscreen all over myself, covering myself with Off and catch a fish with it. Doesn't really matter. And Booker back in the day, he did an experiment. Not scientific, but he just kind of did it. We're like, okay, we're dipping bucktails in a litany of different stuff, from dipping them in the gas tank of the boat to peeing on them to pouring anything and everything on them, and it really didn't have an effect. Right? So, I've heard guys that swear by taking walleye guts and soaking their bulldogs in them. Okay. I don't know.
That sounds like fun.
It sounds like a recipe for stink. And the thing, can you imagine, like, hold on, boys, we need to replenish the gut bucket.
Don't throw them walleyes away. Hold on.
You guys don't eat the guts, do you? Yeah, I need those. I mean, I don't want to catch them that bad, folks. I just don't. Don't care. Like, if I have to maintain a gut bucket, I'm out. I'm just not that. I don't care enough. I just simply don't want to be like, can you imagine, like, surely somebody's got like a old cooler on their boat full of nastiness. Oh, put the bulldogs in there. If that's what it takes, I don't have it, Jay. I'm tapping out. I want to be able to go somewhere and eat after this. That's my goal.
Yeah, I've always passed on the whole scent thing in terms of, like, just overreacting on it. Is the way I look at it. It's like you said, how many times you get in the boat and you're fiddling with stuff, and it's just like, you might not even know it, but you touch something that's got a little bit of gasoline or oil on it.
Every day,
probably a bug spray. All these things are extremely noxious.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to transfer. I could it help close the deal? I'm sure it could. I mean, but the game is this: is
you've who got, knows with muskies? Maybe they smell the gasoline, and this fleeing baitfish looking like lure is darting away from them, and it's something completely unusual, and they just want to kill it.
Who knows?
Maybe it helps some days,
I doubt it.
Because it's different.
Yeah. I don't want to sit there and spray that crap all over the boat. I remember one.
Nope.
There was, I can't remember what company made it, but there was this Sprint, like, scent spray, Jay, that would
eat. Bait Max.
I can't recall which one because it did bad things, and I have a client that ate his steering wheel on his Ranger.
Oh yeah, right. I know what you're talking about.
It would eat the plastic, so it's like, dude, they're spraying all over their boat all day, and then they go and drive their boat, and it's like literally melts the steering wheel, the variation of some plastic that the steering wheel was made
and you'd spray it, and you notice about 2 days later that some droplets in the wind got on the screen of your locator and ruined it,
cooked them. That's another one. That's another thing to watch out for. And a whole other tip, we are, you know, here very shortly you're going to go from crying about that it was cold to there's mosquitoes everywhere.
Yeah
Do not spray off around your electronics. It will not kill them, but it'll stain them up. You'll see all these little white specks on it where it's actually interacting with the plastic. It'll look like you kind of took a paintbrush full of white paint and flicked it at your screens, and it will actually get on the plastic of different locators, and you'll go, what is that all over that? Well, that's off. That's spittle from your bug spray. So spray it away from that. But yeah, whatever. Jake, can we get a vintage case of whatever this flesh-eating scent spray was?
It's not legal in the States anymore. Only legal in Venezuela.
We were able to contact the parent company in Bangladesh, and through back channels of Venezuela, the Musky Shop is proud to announce. Yeah, we got a shipment of this.
Proud to denounce this.
Proud to denounce it. Literally, it's musky scent and body dissolver. If you got to get rid of a human corpse, you just spray it on there and take it. Good Lord. Yeah. Scent it up, boys. Scent it up. Okay, Fred, I'm starting to get a big collection of rubber baits. How do you store them in your boat? That is an issue. I use my Wreck and Rack boxes. I actually have a little dealio Josh from Wreck and Rack built me, which is just kind of like a standard layout of a box, nothing special. But the one thing I'm always watching for on rubber baits is that I'm not getting the tails hooked into the other baits. The amount of like alien eels and bulldogs and all this stuff, I've gone to pull up a box and I've screwed them up.
Ripped them up
or they're hooked under the hook. You got to grab it out, and you're in a hurry. You got to make that next cast, and it's like torn up rubber bait. Speaking of melting things, and it doesn't seem to be a problem anymore, but man, the good old days, if you put two wrong baits together and they just had a chemical reaction, that was exciting. Remember that, Jay? You'd get the different rubber baits.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Plasta-X. Plasti-X. That stuff. You could stretch it. It had a stretch ratio of like five or something like that.
And it just
like five times the, you know, the, and it wouldn't break, but if that came into contact with human flesh, another lure,
you just melt right through it,
or an animal hide, it would really cause problems.
No. I mean, the best storage that I've come up with.
Or a horse.
Do not, right there in the bottle, do not apply this bait to a horse. take no responsibility. The best thing you can do is make sure that you're giving your tail baits, your anything with a big long tail, give them a wide enough berth so in travel they're not flopping around and hanging around everybody, right? You get like kind of this Rat King mess in there. So I just hang them straight up, vertical up and down. In like the built-in of my boat, I've actually used downspout because I had aluminum. It's horrible, but at one point they were making me aluminum storage splitter little deals, and it would just like hook scratch on it. So some kind of plastic thing. You could get a Lakewood and just kind of relegate your plastics to that. I would recommend, to be honest with you, if you got a ton of plastics and you want to separate each of them, which minimizes any kind of damage to each bait, you're not worried about anything kind of getting chewed up. I would grab one of those like Flambeau maximizers, right? What is it called, Jay? The big green one?
Maximizer.
Is it the max? Wow. I knew it, boys. Look at that. That's an inexpensive box. Let me see here. you know, if you, unless you want to go, you could get your Lakewood Monster and, you know, go whole hog on it. But a you know, a Flambeau, is it Flambeau? Yeah, Flambeau Maximizer. They've got onesie dividers, and I kind of like onesie dividers if you're trying to keep stuff that is prone to tearing up. Do that. I think that's probably your easiest solution. Or just, you know, like Jay does, just put all your rubber baits in a backpack. Just a backpack full of baits. What do you think, Jay? Just throw them all in there, call it a day.
Well, I've tried that. Yeah, it's a mess getting them out. They call it a dog ball.
Dog ball.
When you get them out.
Mm-hmm. Dog ball. No, it is a hot mess. And nobody ever sells replacement tails anymore. Well, I'm just hung up on. I hate that.
Like, no, they don't, do they?
No, you just get a hook in the other tail and you go. Yeah, I like kind of quarantine them in their own slot. That'll be the safest for all parties involved. Tom, what are the best ways to find bait when fish are shallow? It's hard to use electronics in less than 5 feet to see anything. How do you narrow it down? Nice. So, when you're fishing in these typical shallow zones, I mean, you're not going to look down on your down scan all the time and go, oh, there's shad or there's walleye. You're going to have to rely on structure as a starting point, right? And then just looking for intermittence, because the shallower things are, and I've seen it before where you go, man, there's nothing. The water column's empty. Everything's gone, right? Everything's gone. I don't see anything on bottom. I don't see. They're so shallow that you're not even paying attention, right? Really good strong sign is any surface activity. I mean, it's good to be observational in shallow zones, especially, like you said, in 5 feet. I mean, you know, depending on how deep your trolling motor is, I mean, he's got to swim straight up under the boat, you know. Especially if we're thinking about peak time, like summertime and things of that nature, where it's like peak weed growth, you're not going to have a lot of feedback where you go, boom, there's the bait fish, right? So if we were going to try to narrow down where is the highest density of bait fish in that scenario, observational skills, to be honest with you, you can kind of even pick up another rod. That time of year, if we're in kind of the peak stuff, you know, asking around, looking around, or paying attention where people are catching panfish, where people are actively targeting and having success with you know, smaller versions of fishing. Because I mean, you can find one weed bed where you go, okay, this checks all the boxes structurally, and the other weed bed checks all the boxes structurally, but you know, the density of bait in this one's better than the density of the bait in the other, right? So paying attention to that for lack of anything else, because I mean, your electronics are only probative up to a point, and once you're in those shallows, you're going to have to kind of wing it and fling it. Obviously, if you have forward facing center, you can kind of look, you know, into the weeds, into the edges, and see if there's bait fish, or look further out from the boat down the edge. But you know, at that point, you're gonna have to rely on what they call man optics, Jay. It's your eyeballs.
Yep. It's old school.
Old school. You know, always look for a friendly local on a pontoon boat, trying to fill his freezer full of walleye.
Sometimes they are pulling them in left and right and 4 feet with weeds, and sometimes they are just sitting there.
Yeah, and a lot of times, I mean, you know, you can still see stuff happening. You just got to kind of narrow it down. I will often just kind of think ahead, you know, wind, waves, anything that's going to move those bait fish, right? Especially, and the example being, let's say we have two really good options structurally, right? Both kind of check the same boxes. Both are at glance on paper, they're equally good. you know, that's when we start looking at wind. That's when we start looking at boat traffic, which can play into that. We start looking at, you know, what side of the lake is this? You know, is it getting more sun? Is it getting less sun? What's happening there? You know, if your two locations to choose from are equal, which is not often the case, but it happens when you go, okay, this checks all the boxes. This checks all the boxes. Bait density is a great question because, yeah, the more bait present, the more predators we probably have and inevitably helping us kind of dial in more on that. Carl. That's a name you don't. Jerry, when's the last time he ran into somebody named Carl?
Sling Blade.
Wow. Offensive. I like
it. Give you some of them French fried taters.
Biscuits and mustard be just fine with me. God, that's a good
not
movie.
Bad.
Not bad. Well, I'm Jay, just normal speaking voice. I'm 75% of the way there.
I mean, that's half the people at Quick Trip down there speak like that, right?
What, a Quick Trip? We don't have Quick Trips.
Yeah, whatever you call the little convenience stores. It's like
Bucky's.
You got anything with your gas today? You want a burger?
You need what you need with that gas then. Now, the ones that speak to me like that are typically at boat ramps.
Oh, okay, even worse.
Yeah, we've been after them catfish. And and you just go, yeah, absolutely. It's like,
didn't sir, understand you, but sure.
I'll tell you. And people are lovely, and I love them all, Jay. What I do find to be hilarious is, speaking of boat ramp people, it kills me.
You know, you can learn a lot of things, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all.
Oh, no.
I will be standing there. I'm wearing my hat, right? I wear the same hat every day. Not the same one, but the same make and model. It says Musky Shop. Most days I'm wearing a Musky Shop shirt and or hoodie, right? I believe in 5 foot tall letters. What does it say on the side of my truck, Jay? Musky
Peace.
Shop. Peace. Oh. Right? something about grass and gas or something. No, but other than that,
Exxon.
No, you're missing the joke. But so there's a giant Musky Shop thing on that. All over the deck of the boat, there's Musky Shop. There's all kinds of stuff, right? And the look, you're dead in the face. What are you fishing for?
Yeah, sure.
And I just go, you should say,
it's a giant 3D Musky.
Yeah, I'll just go, bluegill. It's just like if there's 12-inch baits hanging. I'm venting, right? I'm just venting, you know? It's like, what are you fishing for? Gatefish. Rockfish. That's my favorite. Rockfish. Oh, anyway, but yeah. I don't even know where we're at. Was there a question? Oh, yeah, Carl, who were
Carl, yeah.
Carl,
yeah.
Sorry. We're off base, Carl. My apologies. Gearing up for this season. What do you guys think about stagger blades? Are they still going to be a hot item this summer? A hot item is selling or hot item with fish? I think a lot of people are late to that party and people are going to buy a bunch of them. Jay, what do you think? Is it going to stay hot with the fish? What's the hot bait?
Yeah. You know, it depends on the weather. Look at, what was it, only 2 months ago when we had the son of Herbeck on, Danny, mm-hmm. and him and his buddy from Lake Lewis, Joe, were talking about, they kind of recapped and went over exactly what conditions were like for Canada. It was not what they expected. It was not normal. And they had to make a ton of changes and adapt to be able to catch fish and put fish in the boat for their clients.
Yeah.
And that bite never really developed because of a lot of cold weather in the spring, slow warming, this, that, and the other thing, and affected weed growth and all that. Yeah. On a normal year, absolutely. I mean, stagger blades are deadly. There's a ton of them out there. Right. The frenzy stuff, the spanky stuff, you know, tons of fish caught on them in the appropriate conditions, time.
Right. And if I were fishing, you know, heavily pressured water, I'm going to move on to something else, though, which is, you know, that's not the operative part of the question, but I'm telling you, by the time it hits the general public, the party's over. I've always, you know, This was the past year where everybody's staggered. I got the new 9-4, you know, they got the combo 8-12, whatever. I'm just making that, but you had all these weird combo blades, and everybody kind of is like, oh, these are banging it up. And it's like, okay, late to the party. If I'm fishing pressure water, they're seeing, you know, numerous anglers per day. I mean, and they're throwing bucktails. I don't think it's going to change your world. You know, and again, I'm the king of saying bucktails are played out. But if there's pressure, you know, move on, do something else. Don't look for the same answer everybody else is looking for, because everybody's, you know, going, oh, that could be the ticket. I think they're going to play just about anywhere, because Jay, if you look at it, in my opinion, the stagger blade combos are really kind of birthed out of the necessity to make a different vibrational profile than double eights and double nines and double tens to get fish to engage again, right? So it's birthed from pressure. It's birthed from fish coming in on, well, we keep throwing eights and they keep breaking off. Let's try a 9-8 and see what happens. Oh, they'll eat that. It's not like in the course of muskie fishing that someone has sat down and go, ah, I'll tell you what will revolutionize bucktails is the combination, to change a combination. No, it's okay. How much rat or how much milk can we get out of this rat? You know, how much can we milk blades a little bit more? Okay. Now we're augmenting the combination, and we keep changing this up until pretty soon. Okay. The fish that ate double eights, you see what I'm saying? It's like, we didn't need them before, and it didn't change. It didn't change the results of bucktails. When bucktails first hit the scene, like your double tens, it was gangbusters, and then it wasn't, right? And then you get your weird combinations, and it's gangbusters, and then it won't be. So that's my only cautionary tale there, is don't be solely relying on it. I throw plenty of blades. I've thrown plenty of staggers over the years now, which is, you know, if you need to get fish to eat, it can work. But in the grand scheme of things, look to other things there. Gregory, I've been pitching jigs for early season fish with quite a bit of success. But what are your guys' favorite jig combos as far as plastics and trailers?
What?
No. There's quite a few. I am perfectly content with just generic stuff. Like if I'm throwing like a big swim jig, it doesn't have to be too fancy. I've done fine with just like Action Plastics. Kalen's grubs have always treated me pretty well. At times I've gotten funky and you go, okay, let's get the salamander bag and see what happens. So I think as far as like a plastic or some kind of soft body with a swim jig or early season throwing jigs up shallow and working some of these fish, you know, anything. I don't think at that point it's like, okay, if we go with a spring lizard as a trailer versus we go with a grub tail, I don't think it's going to be that huge of a difference. Jay, have you ever thrown like swim jigs on these suckers? Or
yeah,
like when you fish in the river? Yeah,
do you used feel like to quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, something simple is just get a half-ounce jig, a good one, you know, like what Kalen's makes, something right, with a wide gap, you know, and a heavy hook. But light, put a 6-inch Magombo grub on the back of that, done. You know, you could skirt it if you want, but it's not necessary.
No.
You got a slim profile, and you got constant action and a fairly slow fall on that. And yeah, they work in the spring. It's just not something I've used recently at all.
No, I'll give you a secret, okay? And this is, you go, I'll see a lot of guys go, hey, you know, I want to throw swim jigs, and it works. It honestly works, especially early season when fish are up on shallow flats and all this stuff, and go, when you need it, and by the time you get the crap off, and it's like, you could literally be on a super shallow bite like that and you know, order stuff, and by the time it arrives, that bite's gone for the year, right? Like you're fishing this dirty shallow stuff. Super easy trick, this is kind of my rough and ready, don't judge me here, is take the blades off a spinnerbait. If you have like a Steve's meat grinder, you can take the blade off and work it like swim jig. And I've done that more times than I care to admit. I've actually probably never given, I don't think I've ever given that secret up, but that's, it's a heck of a secret. So the arm of the spinnerbait kind of works as a guard. So you just completely remove that and you just hop the spinnerbait body. Obviously, it's not like a stand-up jig or something like that, but muskies don't care. And just remove the spinnerbait arm. Or remove the blade off the spinnerbait. Like I said, one of the configuration of the Steve's meat grinder single-bladed, and when I came up with that originally, you know, it was just to protect it from weeds. And I went, okay, if I just take the heat shrink off and I take the blade off, now I can bottom bounce this pretty dang easily. So I'm not going and rigging up a ton of, you know, oh, here's my swim jig box. No. I've already got it skirted. It's always got a grub on it. And I want to fish like a small stream. There's some super skinny, we talked about before, but there's super skinny water in some places I fish. I'm like, I'm not going to carry around this thing. I'll take two spinner baits, one black one, one white one. Okay, I'm going to throw them with blades a little bit. I'll take the arms off. Okay, I'm going to make these long casts down the channel. Take the blade off, bottom bounce it, and just shellac fish. And it takes all the guesswork out of it. And that has worked wonders for me, believe it or not. Because you basically just have you already own a musky caliber swim jig. Just take the blade off a spinnerbait. Thank you. It's dumb, but it works. Hey, you know, again, you can get fancy. I've never, you know, there's a million different like configurations, like stand up jigs and all this stuff. But man, when I've caught muskies on anything of that nature, they just pin it, you know, bounce it off the bottom, and they just pin it to the bottom. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to stand up and be like all bassy. Oh, let's get her here. Brad, trying to figure out trolling in general. I know it's just putting baits behind the boat and driving, but what is the best way to get into it? Any advice would be helpful. I'm struggling. Okay. Easy. He said putting baits. So let's assume he's trying to do more than one. My number, the first rule of Fight Club is we only troll one rod when we start. Okay, you might be relegated to one rod with your state regs or something of that nature, but if you are wanting to learn how to troll, troll one rod. Don't complicate it with, oh my goodness, I've got to troll seven rods because I can, right? Less is more when you're getting going. You need to understand what that lure is doing. You're going to go at lure, but I always recommend to start with one of the more basic baits because you're going to lose baits, period. Starting with the Joe Booker Depth Raider straight model, right? 8-inch Depth Raider straight model. That would probably be the bare bones, like starting place. It catches fish, and they're pretty consistent on the running depth. Obviously, you got the app, and there's all the line length and the running depth there. Start with something that is straight model, basic application, and the big tip is make sure that rod, wherever your rod is placed, is in a position that's pretty close to your transducer to start with. So, you know, you'll have a lot of guys that have their down scan sonar or whatever, and it's on, say, the port side of the boat, troll off a port, you know, vice versa. So you're seeing directly underneath you and the bait's trailing you. So you're going, oh, okay, I saw that lift up. There's a little bit of a hump here, and then you see the rod tick, right? And you've got to realize just the concept of it. It's relatively simple, but you know, we've got videos on it. It's easy. And when you see it and when you do it the first time, you understand that your inside turn and your outside turn of how you maneuver the boat, how it affects that bait. Okay. Turn away from the rod you're trolling. That bait speeds up. Turn into it. It slows down. And go out and try to not catch a fish at first. I mean that. Go out in open water where you're not worried about snagging anything. You're not worried about losing a bait. And go out there, put one rod in the rod holder, you know, let out X amount of line, and just watch what is happening. Right? What guys typically do when they try to get into trolling is they will come out with that full, here's the full onslaught. State reg says I control three. I'm starting with three. And they get them all fouled up, and it just takes the sport right out of it. Now you're having a bad day, or you lost baits. That's it. The other thing I'll say is this. Be prepared for getting stuck in, if you got timber, rocks, whatever, you're going to get stuck in crap. Your baits are going to get weeded up. You will inevitably get line in your big motor. You'll get line in your trolling motor. It is going to happen, right? Perfect example, Jay. I got Dr. Bob out with me here recently, right? He trolls all the time. I'm obviously trolling with some consistency. Go out, I think, at least twice while we're trolling, if not more. It's like got completely snagged, right? I'm running close to cover. Bam. And, you know, he doesn't bat an eye. I don't bat an eye. I just put the boat in reverse, reel stuff up, get it out, reset, yeah, and move
go
on.
Go back and get it.
It's not exactly catastrophic. You didn't do anything wrong. If you're making contact with cover and structure, you're going to catch more fish. It is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of guys going, I'm getting fouled up. I don't know what I'm doing. No, you're fine. All right. It is okay. Right. There is no trophy at the end of the day for Mr. Did not get snagged while trolling. No one cares. Right. That is just get that in your head. You're going to feel better. Trolling weed lines. That's something that comes up all the time, especially once we get into the summer and peak season stuff. I'm getting fouled up all the time. So am I, bro. So am I. You know, it's just like, it's how you deal with it. Who cares? I'm trolling spinner baits in a, because I think in people's heads, when they're trolling, they want to go, okay, I'm down to this 20-foot break line, and it's like, you know, it's like perfect. And I didn't hit anything and I didn't foul up. Oh, well. Right? Or you're going near a weed edge. Weeds are irregular. The bottom of a body of water is irregular. So cut yourself the slack. And I don't mean even when you're getting started. In general, who gives a rat's ass? You're going to get snagged. You're going to get hung up. Your baits are going to foul. They're going to get weed fouled. Now, where skill comes into play is, heck, little cheats and tricks and knowing how to unfurl those baits a lot of times where you don't have to stop and reset everything. But like I said, give yourself a break, take it easy on yourself, go out in the open water, play with a bait that is, you know, I don't recommend starting with like what I call these busky size baits, like a lungeon or, you know, something that's more bassy size, like just a straight depth rater. That's kind of your milk toast, run-of-the-mill bait to get acclimated with, right? And I say that because there's nothing wrong with like a Lungeon 22 short or like a Shad Wrap or any of these. But, you know, the smaller the baits are, the way they turn is a little bit different, right? Focus on like a depth rate. It's gonna come with you pretty well. It's going to dig in. One thing that people will do, especially when they're trolling or getting going, they're going to turn too sharply and you'll see baits. At a certain point, if you turn too sharp on the lip of a bait, right? So the bait is coming with you. If you can imagine your head, you've turned and the lip kind of rolls over and it will cause baits to shoot up, right? So the lip has lost its grip in the water. So that's why I recommend like a depth rater, right? Okay, you've got plenty of surface area. You can turn too tight for them, but not often. And so that'll allow you to kind of play with a bait in open water and focus on the one rod routine. The next thing I recommend is finding an area that you're very comfortable with the depth of. You know, X, Y, and Z area is 10, 13 feet, right? It's 10 to 13 feet. Go out and look at what bottom contact looks like on your boat with your rods. And go, okay, that's hitting bottom. That's what that is. Okay, that is what that contact looks like. Now, if you got it, if the world is your oyster and you know an area that goes, okay, I know an area that is soft composition. This is muck or mud. And I have an area that I know is a rocky area. Now go and take said depth rater and, okay, cool. That's what soft contact looks like. Now this is what rocks look like. That'll help you even more, right? And you start adding that in. And once you go, oh, okay, I know what I'm hitting while I'm trolling. Not only are you more aware of the bottom's composition while trolling, you go, oh, okay, I just came out of rocks and I hit a soft area and you got a strike. You know what it looks like. You've paid enough observant time to go, that was what happened. Because how do you know what happened if you have no clue? Right? It's lost on most people.
Yeah, it appears random.
It's random. I caught a fish off. Man, we are trolling. We caught one. Cool. What happened? We caught one. And most people, the conversation is steered. It's funny. It's a Dr. Bobism even. He had a thing where he was fishing in this event, and he told everybody, and this is Bob conveyed this to me. He fished this event. He told everybody what he did, right? And by everybody, it's a small group of people, whatever. This is what I was doing, and I was contacting X, Y, and Z and caught a fish, and he won the event. And everybody looks at him and goes, well, what color was it? That was the question, where it was a transitional bite of fish that are staged on a transition, I believe. But this, I've seen this a million times, where fish are staged on a transition between soft and bottom, you know, soft bottom, hard bottom. They're coming off rock. You know, it can be anything. Transitional zones, edges. Herbeck's always pounding it. There are other edges in the topography of a lake, the bathymetry. You know, composition is edge, right? We're coming out of pea gravel into bedrock. It's different, right? We're coming into like big wash boulder, old river channel is way different than a bedrock section, which is way different than an area that is all soft muck with vegetation. That is invaluable as a troller to look at a bait and go, oh, I know what that composition, that bottom is, how that's reacting. I have a general idea of what a strike with the bottom of just typical soil is versus a rock strike versus, okay, that's glancing off of timber or that's in big chunky rock because it's coming up and it's banging again. And it's go out, have a feeling for what you're trolling in and learn that way. That is invaluable. The rest of it is driving the boat. Right, just drive the boat and you'll get them. But once you have that under your belt and you know what the rod tip should look like at varying degrees of speed, it's huge. Anyway, man, I could go on for hours on that one. Jay, I think we've caught up on a little Q&A, just a smidge here. But anyway, we got it. Jay and I have to get up early. We got to stock the we got to stuff the stockings with care full of blade planer boards, I believe.
That's right. Tomorrow's the day.
Jay's a little blade planner.
Finally.
Christmas elf. Anyway, Jay Bird, say a Vita Zane.
Thanks, guys. Night.
Later.